Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
But now, because of the law I signed, billion-dollar companies have to pay a minimum of 15%. God love them.
We are talking about President Biden's State of the Union address last night. We are at the Reporters Roundtable. We're going to be talking about all of the issues that are important to you. Joining me at the Roundtable are Reese Colbert, founder of Black Women Views, and Jamila Bay, news editor with Viacom. Also, you, the listener. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Reese, Jamila, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you, Harold, for having us. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Let me start with you, Reese. Let's talk about your reaction to the State of the Union last night. From the view of a Black woman, what did you hear that you cared about?
Well, I thought that President Biden did surprisingly well. I really didn't have super high expectations for him, but I think he hit all of the right notes. I was particularly impressed with the way that he took the fight directly to Republicans. He didn't play the both sidesism game. He didn't mince words when it came to the radical agenda that Republicans are proposing. I particularly liked the part where he forced them essentially to flip-flop on their Social Security and Medicaid attacks right on the House floor. So that was especially impressive. But I also really loved the way that he brought home the kind of trauma and horror that Black families are dealing with when it comes to police violence. He didn't back away from it, and he really saluted the family of Tyre Nichols very well, and the emotion with that was really powerful. I don't expect much from Republicans, but at least in that moment, he really brought home how much pain we're in. And then the last thing I'll just say is, the part about cancer, I think when he talks about grief, and we all understand what happened with his son Beau dying of cancer, that really resonated with me. The family, their daughter's name is Ava, my daughter's name is Ava, and just I could not imagine the being in that unspeakable position of having to have your child go through so many surgeries. So I think that on policy, in terms of bringing receipts, and in terms of the emotional impact of his speech, I think he knocked it out of the park.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Jamila, same question. What struck you last night?
I'm going to put on my rhetorical studies scholar cap for
you.
A
always
moment.
Do. That's why we love you.
First of all, he came out, and the first thing he did was he said, "Hey, y'all, this is my boy Kevin. Kevin, shake my hand. Kevin, like a happy puppy, wagged his tail and smiled." And the first thing he did, and I don't think people recognize how powerful this was, when he went to Kevin McCarthy, or 15, as I like to call him.
Why do you call him 15? What is that?
15. Oh, that's how many times it took them to get the vote.
Oh, okay. Okay.
To be the leader.
Okay. Go ahead.
15. That's faster than Sam Kevin McCarthy. what he did, Joe Biden came out there and said, "I know the game plan is that the GOP said we're going to sit here, we're going to be stony, we're going to give him no affect, we're going to give him nothing to play off of, we're not going to hoot and holler, we're just going to sit here and be present, that's it." And the first thing he did was say, let me make you watch that your leader can't lead you.
Okay.
So he came out there, every rhetorical from the slow, deliberate pace of telling people who don't know, we know, but there are people that don't know, turn on your internal light if you get pulled over. Put your hands on the steering wheel, and to watch him pantomime doing that, to slow down even his relatively slow speaking cadence, and pull people in. Whether or not you agreed with him or disagreed with him, you had to listen. It was masterful. I'm going to be honest. I really had no expectations going in. I didn't want to be being like, wow, Joe Biden at 80 years old just gave a masterclass in how to do a presidential State of the Union. But for the only time in history, and I've been checking all day, there's been exactly one time in history that a president got policy concessions in the State of the Union address publicly, and it happened last night. That's a big deal, y'all.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about what he said about the talk.
Most of us in here have never had to have the talk that brown and black parents have had to have with their children.
You know, it's interesting, Jamila, when you spoke about that. And I think the president was spot on when you talk about black and brown families having that conversation, air quotes, the talk. But I think that for, you know, for other people in this country, you know, particularly for, you know, for white people, I think, you know, they probably were well educated about what is the talk. And even though we've been talking about the talk for so many years, I would argue there are probably still some people who are not black, who are not brown, who don't know what it is. Jamila.
Yeah, first of all, it humanized every mother, every father, everyone who knows a child, loves a child, in a way that made it seem like, wow, this is what black families have to do? Wow, that's a lot. I mean, really? And again, the fact that you heard that slowed down cadence made people feel a little bit uncomfortable. Humans tend to be uncomfortable with silence, even when they're listening. So that he slowed it down and drew it out, it gave a slight patina of anxiety just in what he was saying that really, I think, resonated with, definitely with black families. But it made that issue one that had to be listened to by folks who don't think that that's the talk we have to give our sons and our daughters to.
And this also coming, Reese, literally 30 days, exactly 1 month to the day that Tyree Nichols was assaulted in Memphis. It happened on January 7th, this speech, the State of the Union, happening on February 7th.
Right. And I think that he really hit the right notes. You know, I'll be honest, to date, President Biden has gone out of his way to show that he is an ally to the law enforcement community. And he still hit those notes, but he did it in a way that I think, as Jamila says, humanizes victims of police brutality and the things that we have to go through as black people in this country, in a way that I think that he can really win over some people. When he said that police, you know, have a right to go home, you know, leave and come back home, then he said, and everybody else does too. I thought that was really, really powerful because a lot of times I think that particularly our white counterparts believe that it's a zero-sum game. Either the police have free ride or free reign to do whatever they need to do to get back home safely, or there is some sort of accountability, and it's not an either-or situation. It's a both-and. They do have a right to come home, but we have a right to be able to move freely, to go to the grocery store, to go to the movies, to do whatever it is that we need to do lawfully without being executed by the police. And even if there isn't, be clear, even if there is a law that's being broken, we do not have a death penalty on site. We have a trial. There's a process supposedly for that for black Americans. So I think he did a great job of bringing in new people, of really capturing the pain as best a white man could do of the black community and of not alienating the police law enforcement crowd.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about the president's State of the Union address last night. What did you think? What does it mean to you? Let's go to Antoine calling from Northeast D.C. Antoine, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Go right ahead.
How you doing?
I'm fine. Go right ahead, please.
Okay. So what I feel about the the whole thing is, you know, he touched on so much, you know, especially going into the black community, the violence, especially in rest in peace to Tyree and all the other ones. And my deepest condolences to those, you know, families who have gone through this. I looked at a movie, Wakanda Forever, and how the queen addressed the nation with power, with strength, with promise. I really felt that he done that last night. He executed everything the way that he should have as being president of the nation, and he should have done that. Now, what are we going to do, whether we like him or not? Are we going to stand there and fight with him, or are we going to fight against him? Mm. And I think we had a lot of battles against our presidency than the fight with the president. So at the end of the day, whether he's 80 or 90 or whether he's 110, this man sat there and he did not fall asleep. He did not get bored. He spoke with strength and indignity. And
okay.
We need to stand beside him.
Antoine, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. One of the other things that the president spoke about last night that I thought was particularly interesting, and I think it really touches all segments of the community.
But Big Pharma has been unfairly charging people hundreds of dollars, $400 to $500 a month, making record profits. Not anymore.
You know, that was particularly important, particularly, I think, when, you know, Reese, when he spoke about capping diabetes medicine, insulin, mm-hmm. at $35 a month for all Americans, not just seniors. You know, my daughter is a type 1 diabetic. Thank God I have great insurance. She's under my insurance. But without that, I don't know how I would, you know, be able to finance, and, you know, by extension, how she would be able to finance expensive diabetes medicine.
Right. And, you know, it's unconscionable that Republicans are blocking that the Democrats had to compromise in terms of the Inflation Reduction Act and limit the $35 insulin cap to people who are on Medicare, as opposed to what they were proposing, which is for all Americans. The Republicans have refused to give the $35 month cap an up or down vote, a standalone bill. We're not talking about, oh, I don't like this part of the bill, I don't like that part of the bill, and so I'm going to use those other parts to vote against it. I'm talking about Senator Warnock putting a fresh bill against to cap the cost, and Republicans would not allow it to come to a vote. And we've had Republicans elected, for instance, J.D. Vance is a new senator, and and Ted Budd is another new senator from North Carolina who ran against the Inflation Reduction Act, ran against capping insulin. And so this is the party line of the Republicans, and there is absolutely no excuse for it. And I think that health care is a very strong part for Democrats that I wish that they would have ran a lot more on instead of just reproductive rights, which was effective. But I wish they would have really drove home the point about how different the health care policies are between Republicans and Democrats and how drastically that's going to impact everybody's day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about the President's State of the Union address. Ken, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Ken. What's on your mind?
Good evening. You know, I guess anything, whether it be policy or otherwise, is promise. And promises seldom are kept in our communities. And I guess as they start to focus in on police reform, that is not the only issue, obviously, affecting the black communities throughout this country. And in particular, right now, two of my nephews are enrolled at Jackson State, and they still have a significant water crisis there, crisis, you know, and that's a daily issue that affects human beings. You cannot live without eating nor hydration. So, and that's from there to Baltimore to Flint and others. So these are just promises that either side promotes. Meanwhile, we send billions of dollars in weapons and other things over to the Ukraine, when literally in our own state, we can do things transcontinentally. We could literally load things up on trains and trucks and get them to where we need not bottles of water, but literally fixing the infrastructure to at least promote better living, because bad water is connected to miscarriages, among other things, let alone health issues and high lead. That's poison. We need to prioritize. We need to demand what we want, not what they figure out what they want to give us.
Ken, thank you so much. That is such a well thought out thought that that Ken was just sharing with us, Reese. I'll give you 30 seconds before we go to a quick break.
I just want to say, for the record, that is exactly what the White House is focusing on. Vice President Kamala Harris had a lead pipe summit at the White House just last week. She has helped. She has helped to get billions of dollars in water lead pipe infrastructure, particularly targeting Black communities. APA Administrator Michael Regan has done a tour of the South, so that help is on the way for Black communities specifically.
Excellent point. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the State of the Union and what it means to you. What is your takeaway? Lines will stay open until 8 o'clock. Give us a call again at 202-319-7810. We're going to take a break, but don't forget you can hear this in every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. Stay with us. If you're on the phone, you will be able to hear the program. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about President Biden's State of the Union address at the Reporters Roundtable. We're joined by Reese Colbert, founder of Black Women Views, and Jamila Bay, news editor with Viacom. If you have a comment or if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to know what this speech meant to you, so I definitely want to hear from you. Before we go back to the phone lines, I want to talk a little bit more about what Ken just shared with us, because he mentioned what's happening in Jackson, Mississippi. He talked about Flint. There was the lead pipe summit, but he does make a really good point where there's a lot of movement to help Ukraine. I'm not saying that we shouldn't, but there is a need, whether it's the Jackson, whether it's the Flint, or, you know, some of the other emergency situations that we see around this country. Why can't we move as quickly, Reese?
Well, I think, okay, there's a number of things at play, because the administration has basically gotten $4 billion of lead pipe funding, and much of that is prioritized in our communities. However, what happens is it gets hung up at the state. So Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves has held up a lot of the infrastructure funding, a lot of the American CARES Act funding, a lot of different funding that has to go from the federal government down to the local level comes through the state. So that's a local state issue. But I do believe that the administration is pushing very much on that. Last year, when there was all the water problems with Jackson, Mississippi, EPA Administrator Michael Regan was down there, and it was an all-hands-on-deck situation. But I think what's going to have to happen is people are going to have to put more pressure on their local, particularly Republican governors, who want to obstruct funding from the government, federal government, to these Black cities who often have Black mayors.
Yeah. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Shaw, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I would just like to say that President Biden have been one of the most effective presidents since Lyndon Johnson, especially to the African-American community. If you look at all the major legislations that this president has passed will impact our community very, very much so. This is the president that appoint the first African-American woman to the Supreme Court. We have tons of black judges that he has appointed. He's been good to our community. He's been great to our community. And as for Flint and all the other water problems that we're having, it's coming, as the president said. He invested over $1 trillion on infrastructure. That will come. That will come soon. Okay. That's all. Thank you.
Shaw, thank you so much. Let's talk about infrastructure, because I think one of the things that a lot of people don't really understand about the impact of rebuilding the infrastructure in this country. Let's not talk about Biden's bill. Let's just talk about what infrastructure is and the building of bridges and roads, but all of the other jobs and businesses that often come with that. You know, Jamila, Reese, you know, this was a really, really big deal. And last night, he made the point. He said there were Republicans who didn't vote for it, but are reaping the benefits. And he said, I'll see you at the groundbreaking.
That was skillful. That was so skillful. Yet again, you know, telling them, yeah, y'all, you bluster, but I see you, and I'm going to see you again. There were so many little, he was throwing shade as though he was the moon in another celestial body, eclipsing it all night. It was brilliant. But let's talk about infrastructure. Every chance I get to tell people, when that bridge in Pittsburgh collapsed and you saw a truck at the bottom of that ravine, that was my family. Those are people whose blood is similar to the blood that runs through mine. My sibling couldn't get her son to school on time. It used to be a 15-minute drive, but because that bridge went out, it was a 45-minute drive, and all the points of egress into that particular neighborhood where my nephew's school was. It's an important thing. When we think about the everything from the machine operators who can bring the gravel in on the trucks, to do fill, to the engineers, to the, you know, pop-up sandwich trucks and food trucks that are feeding people,
yes,
and providing care to sick relatives and putting babies through school and through college and paying for homes. You know, the infrastructure that allows that to happen has to come from the federal level. When you talk about, you know, these it used to be called, oh, the pork belly project. We don't like no pork belly project. They put in their pet project. No, here's what happens. When we think about the fact that, and President Biden said it last night, there are a whole lot of kids who have to go to McDonald's to make sure they can get their homework done because there is no high-speed internet. There are a lot of people who don't have access to the required infrastructure of that our technology demands in the world today. If I'm trying to sell Jamila stickers or whatever it is, and you can't get to my website because I live in a little rural place where the website can't or the infrastructure can't control a lot of traffic to my website, that's taxes I'm not paying. That's roads that's not getting paved. That's school children without books, without lunches either, but that's a whole other issue.
Mm-hmm.
Being willing to invest in the literal air and water and roads that allow us to get back and forth and be about the business of running our countries, it has reverberations from in utero to, you know, not being on this planet anymore. And again, Biden pointed out, y'all GOP that don't want to vote for this, you reap the benefits. When we say, you know, this project is paid for by, you know, by the federal government, and all of a sudden your idle kids who are living in mama's basement can get up and go get work, you happy with it then? So it's just, again, I go to the rhetoric. It was masterfully spoken.
It was plainly explained. Anyone who watched it, anyone who heard it, took away, yeah, I want that, I want that. And then just like Kevin McCarthy, I'm sorry, 15 as we call him now, just like him wagging his tail going, oh, yeah, I'm a good boy. Thank you for praising me, Mr. President. I agree with you. And then they catch themselves and go, oh, wait, I'm not supposed to like that.
Yeah.
But I think I will take that infrastructure.
And to that point, Reese, I mean, we have to always remember that the federal government and even state governments and even your local governments, they don't make anything. This is just money that trickles down from the federal government, from this bill that the president was able to sign. But we're talking about federal government contractors, state contractors, city and town contractors. And in this area, a lot of those contractors are people of color. And that, again, is another way that businesses and individuals build wealth by contracting with the government to build and put together the things that are part of this infrastructure bill.
Absolutely. And the administration has been very deliberate. In fact, one of the first executive orders that President Biden signed was about advancing equity and opportunity across the federal government contracting or across the federal government period. And that kind of equity is something that has helped improve the position of black businesses, black contractors. And I also want to point out, too, that when we're talking about how black people have gained or can gain from infrastructure, I just want to point out a couple of numbers. I was on a program with Professor William Spriggs yesterday, and he mentioned that for black men, for the first time in history, black male unemployment has been under 6% for 9 months straight. That has never happened in history before. And that includes with black workforce participation being even higher than before. That includes wages being higher. So when we're talking about infrastructure, we're talking about construction, we're talking about union jobs. So this is another opportunity for black people to get well-paying union jobs across multiple sectors, because infrastructure is not just construction. But there is so much opportunity for black people to benefit from this agenda tangibly in the very near term. We're not talking 10 years down the line. And these projects take years to build. And so that's steady work, well-paying work, that is guaranteed through these kinds of projects, not just in construction, but also in manufacturing. We're seeing more manufacturing jobs than the manufacturing jobs that left under Trump and previous presidents. So there is a lot of real tangible benefits that are coming our way, even beyond what has already been a huge improvement.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Pamela, calling from Silver Spring. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, thank you for taking my call. So I'm in Silver Spring. I'm originally from Jackson, Mississippi, and I'm an environmental engineer. I've had a business on and off for over 30 years. It's not that simple. I've lobbied for infrastructure for 20-plus years, and now we have it, but it's just not that simple. Part of the issue in Jackson is leadership, but part of the issue is disenfranchisement. We talk a lot about stuff on the federal level, but when it gets down into these red states, and I also live and work in Virginia, it's a whole different ballgame. You need financing, you need licensing, you need bonding to be able to do these infrastructure projects. You have to have some structure in your state and local government. So what I really wanted to say is all politics is local. The federal work is great, but once it starts trickling down outside of the blue states, it's a whole different ballgame, and we just have to be more on top of things, and we have to be ready, and there has to be more assistance available at the state and local level.
Yeah. Pamela,
here.
Yeah, thank you for that. I appreciate your comments. Well said. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. One of the other things that was so critical and so obvious last night was the pushback that the president was getting from the Republican side.
But it's being proposed by some of you. Folks,
Yeah, that was Marjorie Taylor Greene calling the president a liar. I did kind of like the coat, though, but that's beside the point.
You look like a furry fungus.
I don't know. I thought it was kind of fly. But anyway, we know that there was a lot of pushback. Kevin McCarthy was trying to shush Republicans who were honestly just being disrespectful to the decorum of the House. Is that just where we are, Jamila, right now? That we're never going to go back, first of all, to the respectful decorum, first of all, and number two, it looks like Kevin McCarthy is still going to have the same kind of problems that he had when he was trying to become speaker. This is just demonstrative of all of that.
Oh, absolutely. But here's again, and genuinely, I'm looking at this with the trained eye of someone who not just observed this, but, you know, studies the theory behind it, too. Joe Biden allowed the Republicans to vent their spleens. He said things that he knew would get a reaction. So that, again, we must point out, those GOP members who had marching orders, y'all sit there with your hands on your lap, you don't move, you don't show any emotion, you just... He said, Joe Biden knew this, Joe Biden said things that made the Republicans lose their natural minds, again, showing up the ineffectiveness and the impotence of their leader, right, political impotence, and made points that after these GOP... He said, okay, well then, work with me. Okay, let's agree then. Hands off Social Security and Medicaid. And on camera, these GOP people who had to save face and clap at that Democrat, clap at that old man they've called sleepy and other things, you know, they publicly acquiesced and conceded to his policy demand. That was history-making. That was rhetorically, there's a lot of times you get to tell off your opponent, but rarely do you get to make your opponent say, yes, I'll do what you want me to do. This was masterful. This was skillful. And the GOP, they have their own to eat. And when they get done eating their own, they each have a tail they can start nibbling on.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the GOP response. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, I must admit, Reese, I expected more because she was in a position now as an elected official that she has to govern. She wasn't just a mouthpiece for the Trump administration. Those days are long gone. Or were they? No, they were not. And there were so many issues that I had with her GOP response. But I'll let you take the wheel on this one first.
I mean, Sarah Huckabee Sanders was a piss poor press secretary, so I did not expect much of her. She greatly benefited from the Huckabee name. In Arkansas, she offered up nothing. Her initial or her first less than 100 days have been nothing more but culture wars. The GOP has no solutions. The inmates are running the asylum. They're an unserious party. The only difference between her and Marjorie Taylor Greene is that Marjorie Taylor Greene favors Dog the Bounty Hunter and has no clue about her, is completely uncivilized. And Sarah Huckabee Sanders has that scowl, and she is very serious. But the words that come out of her mouth are nothing but garbage. And so she did what's expected of her. She's trying to position herself perhaps to be vice president, which I would be surprised by, or for some presidential run down the line, which goes to show just how much bottom of the barrel the GOP has to scrape to get anything that resembles anything remotely close to star power, and she doesn't have it.
But let's talk specifics, because I think the thing that I found really curious was, first of all, of course, she criticized Joe Biden. That's expected. Okay. That's a wash. You can throw that out. But then the very first thing I think that she mentioned that was honest was her, you know, surviving cancer and talking about, how serious cancer is. But she talked about it in the same speech where she criticized a president who is trying to what? To eliminate cancer with this cancer moonshot. I think that sounds to me at the very best like poor planning. Why criticize the anti-cancer president with your story of cancer? That was just a bad, that just wasn't really well thought out.
That was a mess and a half. First of all, let me translate what my people heard from that. Okay, Miss Rich Governor Lady, you had the best health care in the world and you got to live through your cancer, and you're trying to make it so that I, who don't have good health care, can't get the help from Joe Biden, who says he wants me to be able to live through cancer if I get it? What's wrong with you? That's what I imagine. I'm pretty sure that's what people heard.
But then I think that the second mistake was when it appeared to be within the same breath she talked about Joe Biden be beholden to the woke mob. I mean, that's one thing, and she talked about CRT and education that makes people hate each other because of their race. But then a minute later, what did she talk about? She talked about the Little Rock Nine and how proud she was of those heroes. But that story, by their definition, the entire Little Rock Nine story, the horrors of Little Rock Nine, the fight of Little Rock Nine, the abuse and the threats that the Little Rock Nine were subjected to, the entire story is, by their definition, CRT. And so she only talked about the end result, the Little Rock Nine as heroes and the plaques that honor them. But there was a really rough and rocky road to get to that plaque. And that is a story that, again, a lot of people who are against the full depth and breadth of Black history, and I would say American history, are really fighting against. Again, Reese, I think that was another mistake.
It's very patronizing. It's actually disgusting to invoke them when her as well as other Republicans are trying to erase that kind of history being taught in the schools. And this isn't just some, after school special benign thing that happened. I mean, there was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that went into that. So that audience, what that was intended for is for Republicans who are racist, but don't want to just be out loud and proud about it. They want to pretend like they're trying to protect their children. They want to make it an issue of parents' choice and a number of things. Or the woke, that's their new euphemism. But that's what she's trying to get, because she is not winning over no Black folks talking about the Little Rock Nine when we know that the Republican Party is the white nationalist party.
Yeah. We spoke a lot about what Biden did well. Where do you think he did not do well, Jamila?
Ooh, me. Okay. I wanted to hear something about voting rights. I wanted to hear something about, all right, yay, we love America. Yay, we love Americans. Shouldn't everybody be able to vote? We're going to protect the right of every American to vote. Right, GOP? He had them in his hands. He could have done it. I will make the concession that his talk about protecting democracy And the fact that he used the word the big lie, what? Oh, wait, that's praising him. Okay, so redact that last comment. But he really should have used the phrase voting rights, protect voting rights. I wanted that, and I didn't get it. So I'm a little disappointed, Mr. President Joe Biden.
Okay. Your thoughts, Reese, where did he not do well? What did you want to hear that you did not hear?
You know, I think it wouldn't have cost him much to just say pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. That's one additional sentence. It wouldn't have added a lot of time. And I think that would have probably answered the mail for a lot of black people who were looking for something more specific about voting rights. For me, I think that what I would have liked for him to have done is give a little bit of space for Vice President Kamala Harris in that speech. You know, Vice President Kamala Harris has been so unfairly attacked and been under siege since she became the nominee, let's be clear. And I would have liked, while he's taking his victory lap, while he's dropping receipts and showing that they are the most accomplished or one of the most accomplished administrations, you know, that we've seen in recent times, I would have liked for him to have really taken a moment to point out, as he has done plenty of times before, but not in this setting, that Vice President Kamala Harris is a trusted partner and somebody who has taken on really tough assignments. So that was something that was missing for me. Her name was mentioned maybe twice. I searched the transcript. I don't think that was enough. If I have to be nitpicky, I think he should have thrown her a little bit more of a bone while he was goading Republicans throughout the speech and doing a number of things. She deserved a moment because she broke the most ties in history. She took on those tough assignments. She's, like I mentioned earlier, focused on lead pipes, focused on broadband, focused on black maternal mortality in particular, getting states to expand postpartum Medicaid coverage for 12 months. I can list off so many accomplishments that she herself has championed, and that was missing. Her part was missing. And I know that presidents do not typically do that. I'm not saying that that was something that's customary. However, it's very, very unprecedented, the amount of attacks she's taking on behalf of the administration. So that is something that would have really helped boost her, and boosting her, by extension, boost him as well.
It could be a bit of old news, but I would argue that one of the difficult assignments that President Biden gave to Vice President Harris, one of the big difficult assignments, was putting her in charge of the border security problem. That is an impossible issue. It's so much easier to manage a thing than it is to manage people. And mm-hmm. it was a failure under George Walker Bush. It did not work under Obama. It has not worked under Trump, and it's still problematic now. And so mm-hmm. that is, I think, putting her in charge of that just made things really difficult.
Yeah, I mean, when he did that, I said, okay, he's running for re-election. Because you do not saddle your vice president and raise the profile of an impossible problem to solve unless you're running for re-election. So I knew at that moment that he was planning to run for re-election. And to be fair, she's not over the border security. She's over the root cause of migration. But if you're explaining, you're losing. And so putting her anywhere near that, when she's already inevitably going to be the most attacked vice president because of her age, his age, her race, her gender, I think was a calculation. I think it was a mistake. And I think that both of them, as a matter of fact, are suffering because of that.
Yeah. Jamila, I'm going to let you have the last word. Where does Black America go from here when you talk about what they heard from the State of the Union? Biden says finish the job. What's the call to action?
This president, for the first time in American history, talks about giving 30% of federal contracts to black, not people of color, minoritized, black contractors. This president, with the child tax credit, lifted more black children out of poverty since they stole us and brought us here to this country than has ever been before. You know, we will have no perfect allies. John Henry Clark told us that the Negro has no friends. However, I like this guy. This guy is seeking to do me no absolute harm. He's helping me. And on top of it, he's giving my farmers some of their land back. So that's my, if I had the land that my people had coming out of enslavement and sharecropping, I wouldn't have to work, and neither would my grandbabies. But, you know, I'll just eat my Dole pineapples because, you know, the Doles were in Hawaii. This president is doing for black folks what the New Deal and the Fair Deal did for veterans and for every white person and for every white farmer in this country.
All right.
I like this president.
There you go. Reese Colbert, Jamila Bay, thank you both for the conversation. We will be in touch.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, February 8th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.